Welcome to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. Youth ministries rise and fall on the volunteers. So we are here to encourage and equip you. Join the conversation as we tackle the practical questions you are asking so you can help the next generation know Jesus.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. I've got Steve and I've got Lisette here, and we are coming in on the last part of this series, What Should You Do When Your Ministry Is Lonely? And so just a few weeks of talking about our feelings, eh, Steve?
That's my happy spot, right? Let's go.
And we're not lonely because we're doing it together.
Oh, man. Yeah, this is wonderful.
It is good.
It is
Everybody
so funny
because we're jumping into this room right now.
This is why it is always good to have a diverse set of voices around the table and that you talk with. This is outside of my comfort zone for sure, but I think it's a worthwhile conversation.
Feelings are outside of your comfort zone?
Yes.
I want to know 100%. How many boxes of Kleenex Jeremy has on his desk. I feel like you and I, we keep a stock.
We do. I think I've been on many calls with you and I crying. Never one with Jared crying, though.
Today could be the day.
Today will probably not be the day, friends.
Probably not.
But honestly, I remember as a small group leader, as a youth pastor, you know, when you meet with kids, and this hasn't happened lately in conversations I've had with kids, but where they would start being emotional and crying. And especially in the beginning, I was like, I do not know what to do now. Like, there's way more emotion in this room than I would have anticipated. And so it's worth for anybody listening, if you're like, this is a bit out of your comfort zone, I'm with you. But it's worth thinking about this for our own personal emotional well-being, but also for the people around us. Because you might get a chance to be alongside of somebody that you recognize, oh, they really are feeling lonely. And you don't understand quite why, but there could be reasons that we're going to talk about. So 2 weeks ago, we talked about the people that are pouring into us and that we have to make sure we've got that. Last week, we talked about who we're running with to make sure that we've got some peers in ministry. And if you're sitting around and your ministry feels lonely as a volunteer and you've got your small group, there's a chance, and so this is why we're talking about it, that it actually maybe is because of who you're actually pouring into, maybe the teenagers in particular that you're pouring into and the makeup of that group. So Steve, talk to us about the people that we pour into. And it seems kind of odd that that would be the cause of loneliness. And so why do you think that could be the case?
Right. It does. It's not so intuitive to think that I'd be focused on this area if I myself am feeling lonely. It makes a lot of sense, right, to think about the people that I'm running with or that are pouring into me. But in my experience in ministry, I find that I hit seasons of loneliness when I, A, don't have a lot of clarity in my relationships, or B, a lot of awareness or balance in the types of people that I'm working with. Now, I think every youth worker could probably identify with having a high concentration of people that we're pouring into. Mm-hmm. And I wonder sometimes if we have the clarity as to what each of those different relationships cost us. And I'd like to just differentiate maybe a little bit between the types of kids that we're pouring into. I wonder if that would help us as volunteer leaders to just be able to see, like, oh, hey, I recognize that this type of student maybe takes a lot of energy from me. And when I start to feel like my tank is running low, that is when I start to hit my seasons of loneliness. Is that a good place to go?
That was really good, Steve. I liked that whole introduction to that.
You're becoming one of us already, Jer.
that was some of the smartest stuff I've heard you say today. But we've only just begun. Okay, so people that are listening, you think if we're going to give you a couple categories, Steve's going to give you a couple categories, you're going to naturally think of the students that might fit into that category, right, which is perfect. That's what we're looking for. And obviously, this isn't a science. And obviously, like, kids move from bucket to bucket. Like, anytime we try to categorize or simplify things, it's just, I think, inspire us to action and to maybe answer some questions. But obviously, there's nuance to this. So we're totally fine with that. And then, Lisette, you're going to give us the specific examples from your journey of kids in each of these categories. Is that something fun? Are we going to do that?
Sure.
All right. I'm here. Let's do it. Steve, okay. Talk to us about the kids we pour into.
I'm thinking of three types of kids that we pour into. I'm thinking, and this is the one that, you know, as a heart for, you know, these lost sheep, I'm seeing a lot of kids who need intervention, in their lives. Those that are struggling to go it alone, maybe those that are really languishing, might be in some crisis and have a deep burden to carry.
Okay. And so these are the kids in our small group that require like a lot more grace, or like talk more about what the types of these kids, what these kids are like.
Oh man, these kids can wear a lot of hats, right? It could be anywhere from the kid who is having thoughts of suicide, to the kid who is engaged in all kinds of dangerous behaviors, even right down to the kid who is really disruptive, or you know, makes you know, the group vibe, you know, sabotages it at times. You know, these are kids that need some level of intervention.
Yeah, I've got them. So it was Bobby. Bobby had just a really grating kind of voice, and he would interject with inappropriate comments all the time in small group. And I tried so hard to connect with him, even outside of program. I'm like, oh, it's going to work out. Like, I'll just pour some time into him, and like, this is going to be fixed, and he's going to come to Jesus. But he would just say the most inappropriate stuff and yell at other students and create all sorts of just disruption. And then I think about Jeff, and literally, I remember this about Jeff. It was so funny because he got picked up by his grandma after youth. And so she was in the room, in the parking lot, which is so beautiful. And so she watched this interaction happen. He came out, he had gone to our canteen, had a bottle of Jones soda, literally walked out, and there's a couple students around him. He kind of looked around, took the glass bottle of Jones soda and just smashed it in front of the church. His grandma's right there. I'm watching it happen. She comes over and she's like, what did you do? And he's just, you know, those kids, like, just making mess for mess sake. And so fortunately he had to stick around and actually clean it up. But I think about, you know, Bobby and Jeff. Sorry, Lisa, you were going to give us your examples, but no, I'm having a cathartic experience.
That is an excellent cathartic experience. And I can think of all of those. I also have a bit of bleeding heart syndrome, which I think, you know, a lot of pastorally wired people do. Also, the harder the kid, the more I love them, right? That's just like how I'm wired, which is really unhelpful if it's out of balance, because I'd for sure been there where I was journeying, and it was early in ministry where I had a student who attempted suicide. And there was a whole lot that went around all of that. It was a boarding school. Then I ended up becoming their guardian. Not the best choice, guys. I'm just going to tell you, I didn't have any boundaries on how to help look after this kid. Cause I was like, if they're in my care, don't I do everything to look after them? And so then I was at the hospital multiple days a week, and I was at the psych ward cause I was the only one allowed to go in to visit. And eventually I had two more kids from my group attempt, and they were then all there. So I had small group at the psych ward. But what I realized, like, eventually I was tanking emotionally myself, because there's only so many people you can talk to about that. And I realize that's a pretty extreme scenario, but so often I would find, if I was spending so much time with kids that really have a high level of need, that felt pretty isolating, because not everybody's having that experience, and you play all kinds of games in your head about that. So you should probably fix that, Steve.
Yeah. And not only is it, I think, isolating because of the experience, but if it's drawing, like, if you don't have the boundaries, so you kind of mentioned the boundary word, like, you've got some kids that are taking, maybe it's not even a ton of time, but it's just constant. It's like, there's texts, you wake up to them, you know, in the morning, and there's a bunch of texts from last night, and there's no boundaries. They want to see and talk to you all the time. And so you want to be helpful, but you've not figured out a way to 100%. Create that healthy boundary and that separation. Yep. But there's also great things that come from this. So it's not meant to be like all of those interactions have to be negative.
Oh, no, they're wonderful. They're beautiful, but they can be exhausting and they can be out of balance.
Right. Yes. That is the question. It makes me think of, a time when Brent's mom called me, and this is awful, but he was having a down time. And so he had found the liquor cabinet. And so he had gotten drunk and was wandering through a parking lot. And his mom's like, I don't know what to do. Like, can you go? So I was with this small group leader, actually, which was great. And we were able to take this kid that was honestly wandering in the road and wrestle him to the ground and literally hold him until police could come and bring him to a place to, you know, sober up and be safe. And then to follow up the interactions afterwards, it was actually like really life-giving, and he was so embarrassed and yet so grateful for the relationship, that in terms of like, gosh, that's a big commitment for sure. That's a kid that needed some intervention, But there's a lot of good things that came out of that kind of experience, being able to be there. So I want to be cautious just to say the intervention is important. There needs to be boundaries. It has to be helpful. And those are important questions, I think, to kind of deal with, wrestle with. It's like story time. Steve, you got a bunch too.
And we could go the whole episode telling stories of our kids who needed intervention. But one of the things I just want to offer to our volunteer leaders here, how do we approach this? I would actually approach it the same way that I approach my own loneliness with these students and sit down and say, hey, who are the people who are pouring into you? Who are you running with? Who are you pouring into? And one of the things I would consistently find with these students is when I'd ask, who are the people who are pouring into you? It was dead silence. Mm-hmm. Or as I would start to explore some of their relationships, well, I've got so-and-so, an adult figure, a parent or whatever, they pour into me. And I was like, oh, tell me about your relationship with that person. And I think of Josh, who I was sitting down with, and he starts to talk about the people who pour into. And he's like, oh yeah, there's dad. And I was like, oh, tell me about dad. And well, dad's an alcoholic and dad's actually the perpetrator of a bunch of abuse in the home and stuff like that. And I was like, I know it'd be really hard for us to sit in this place right now, but I wonder if we need to add a few more people to pour into, because it actually sounds like this relationship takes a lot out of you, more than it might be putting into you right now in this season, because it sounds like dad's got some stuff going on in his life where he needs additional support. And maybe you're not the person who can offer all the support. And so what do I do with this with Josh is I say, hey, who can we bring around you? And when I would ask them who's in your network that's pouring into you, they'd often say me first because, you know, of the conversation that we're having. However, I would often pause at that place too and say, hey, just for a moment, we'd like to build this out. I'd love to see you have five people who are pouring into you, and I'm going to count as half of one. And you know what? Sometimes that was a little foreign to them because it's like, hey, this was a loving voice in their life. And I was like, the reason why I want to say I count as half is because when you call me, you know what? We're not always instantly able to connect. You know, sometimes it takes a week for us to book a coffee time or whatever. And I want you to have people around you that are available any day of the week, any time of the day sort of thing. And so that's why we need a few more. And because I am just serving so many kids, I got just realized that, hey, we need to put a few more people around you in that.
Mm. I think people might be surprised too. So my examples, so I think about Bobby, the first one I used, and then even, there's a girl in our ministry, Sarah, who in both instances were needing intense intervention and took a lot of time actually. But at one of the points where things kind of changed is we realized when we asked that question, they actually, in this instance, had 8 to 10 people that were giving the same amount of time and honestly had built this incredible network. And so when somebody didn't answer the phone right away, they just go to the next person and everybody kind of felt, there was a network through the church. And so we could actually chat with a few of them and there's a couple of school people and so on like that. But you know, you ask around, you realize like, oh, everybody kind of thought that we were doing this alone for Bobby and for Sarah. And so even as a network of support for this person, mm-hmm. began to have a conversation of like, oh, okay, what if we actually work together to be helpful for them? Which was a really big game changer. And also a little bit of like weight off the shoulders, because sometimes you ask that question, you realize, oh no, they actually have a ton of support. That's incredible. That's so good. And so can we teach them how to leverage the support that they have in maybe a more healthy way?
Like when you do that, you're surrounding yourself with those people that you run with and you're getting clarity in that, right? Which really helps our own loneliness.
Synergy, wow. Steve.
There we got it. I wonder if we should move on to the next student. Because I think we got clarity on the intervention students. The next I want to talk about is the students who need inspiration. And there's a high concentration of these students in our groups as well. They're the ones that are coming in, they're playing church, they're going through the motions, but they just seem to lack that spark. And I know that I can dump a lot of energy into, you know, like students like Riley, you know, who are just coming for the fun. And you are just chasing after, trying to get some level of spark in this kid. Because you see the potential, but I wonder if they see the potential. And, you know, conversations fall flat and there's nothing coming back. Lisette, I think you've got someone in mind
I do. I'm thinking about Jamie, and I'm like, I almost was like, come on, kid. I just want you to not believe it. Okay. You know, that's how it always felt, right? Like, you're like, where? What's missing? How do I help you? And they're just there. They're good. You know, they seem pretty content with the world, but you know, there's something significant missing, and you're just trying to help figure out how to get them there.
I'm guessing a lot of our newer students to our small group probably fit in this category, Steve, like those that haven't bought into everything. Maybe they're not playing church yet. They're just honestly here because somebody invited them. And so they're yet to figure out what their next steps might be. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. And I think that's one of the hard rules that we play, is to think about what is the next step for this student. And to be, you know, balanced in what it is that we're offering these students, because just like the student that needed intervention, we can put a lot of time into inspiring, and, you know, we might be needing to link arms with the people around us and think about the types of experiences that we would lead these kids in to kind of get that spark. You know, when I would think about the students that needed inspiration, I would often be thinking about the key experiences that I needed to bring them to. Those might be missions trips. They might be retreats. It might be inviting them into some personal spiritual retreats, you know, where I can just kind of see if some spark takes place, offer them something and see what the response there is to that.
So what I'm hearing you is that if we've got too many students, or we're being too drained by the students that need intervention, we probably need to discover boundaries. Mm-hmm. And then when you're talking about the students that need inspiration, and if we've got a lot of kids in there and it doesn't seem like there's traction, we need something special to spark that kind of inspiration outside of the regular program. Is that kind of what you're suggesting?
I think that's a great way of putting it, Jer. I think it's really great. And I think as youth leaders, we often think about the messages that we give. And that can be taxing, right? Because we can be preaching at these students. And I wonder if we could just add one thing and think about what kinds of experiences can we bring them into? Because sometimes kids just need to experience it, right?
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so if we got too many kids in the first category, if we don't have the boundaries, we're going to feel a little bit lonely. If we have too many kids in the second category, or if we don't have the right experiences to spark that inspiration, and it just seems like we're treading water, it's going to feel a little bit lonely. Talk to us about that last category.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing that tends to, I don't know about you guys, but this last group really fires me up, is when I have a crew of students that all they need is some investment. I see that they're inspired. I see that they're on track. They're craving, they're hungry, and they're just coming for more. And those are the students that I want to lean into and invest in, because those are some of the students that I just see great returns coming back. And they're the students like Jared. You know, when I met Jared, he was one of those students that on day one, I just like, okay, it felt a little awkward at first, but this was a student who just like on day one was willing to just be vulnerable about anything. He's like, Steve, I just need someone in my life to help me in this area, this area, this area. And he just bore all. And I was like, okay, I think this student might be wanting to go someplace. And you know, it was neat because I got to walk with Jared for a number of years, still walk with him even decades later. And he has just consistently grown into not only being a leader, but a leader of leaders. And so these are the students that, you know, when you've got a few of those, man, it just gives you such joy to get out of bed in the morning to know that you're going to be working with a student like Jared that day. The unfortunate thing is, so often I was so inundated with students that needed intervention, or I was so absorbed by students that were needing inspiration, that I wasn't really taking inventory of the students that all they needed was a little investment, and I could actually be lightening my load by training up the next generation of leaders.
It's so good. I think that's such a healthy way to look at it, Steve. Like, I like that, because I think we're called to all of those types of kids, right? That's why we get into being a small group leader. That's why we get into youth ministry. It's because we care about kids and we want to help them. But I think it's easy. It's such an old phrase, right? But the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing, that all our attention will go to kids with behavioral issues or kids that don't seem to be getting it and you just want them to. And you can totally miss that there's some kids that actually just desperately are waiting for you to invest in them and want to grow, and they'll run with you then, which is an amazing thing. And, I remember when I learned that, and I was like, oh, if I can keep these things in balance, not only do I feel like I'm living on mission, but I feel like I'm energized by the mission that I'm on.
Right. You know what? As you were sharing that, Lisette, I started to think about some of the students that just needed a little investment. And I wonder if one of the barriers that I felt in just really enjoying these students was sometimes I felt a little bit threatened, even when I started seeing these students. Or as I think of one story in particular, I was leading a leadership development program at a camp out here in southern Manitoba. And I had a young leader along my side. And I remember walking into the room, and I was the one of my great joys is leading worship. But I walk into this room, and here's Sean with his guitar, and these kids are all gathered around with him, and they're worshiping. And my first emotion was like envy or frustration or anger. And I was like, Sean has taken my job from me. And uncool. I went away into the next room, and I was like, how dare he? I had that planned for the next half hour, but he started it now, and he took my joy. And I was like, I waited for a second. I was like, wait a second. This is Hold the on. Moment that I've been investing in.
Right.
He has just taken one of my responsibilities, and now I've got time to go and move on to something else. Man, this is one of the joys. But I wonder if sometimes I've avoided investing in students because I kind of like being needed by students. You know, if you've read the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, right? I know John Maxwell shares one of the law of 80%. When you see someone who can do it, 80% is good, hand it off and move on to the next thing, right? Because there is so much for us to do out yep. there.
This is good. Okay, Steve. So if we're finding ourselves, let's say we got a small group leader and they're starting to piece kids into these kinds of categories, what would be like a reasonable next step with that information? I mean, it's a big step to, you know, even think about the boundaries, to even think about, you know, trying to create experiences. It sounds like we probably need to involve like a point leader with them or mm-hmm. some other friend. What's the best way as somebody's processing this information to do it alongside of somebody else?
You know what? Okay, this is going to sound really weird, but I would actually sit down with a spreadsheet and the students that I was working with, and I would actually start to just take a look at A, the amount of time I was spending with each student. Did that look like it was in balance with, you know, with the fruit that was coming from those? Who else could I invite into the relationships with these students to balance that off? Are they getting all that they need from me, or do they need other people in their network? You know, like you shared of that student that had eight other people that were all pouring in. They might have all been pouring in the exact same things, and they might needed someone who was, you know, willing to maybe just take a step and ask a hard question or had a particular skill or insight. And they were just looking for that person. And so I would start looking for that. So I take relational inventory, say, A, who's in my life? What is going in and out? And B, who's in the student's life and what's going in and what's going out? And just ask myself, you know what? Is there balance in this equation?
Mm-hmm. And if there isn't balance, what's the next step?
Well, I think you could probably sit with coach and say, hey, I could use some little insight here. You know, because honestly, we have blind sides, right? Because we get things emotionally, even from those students that need intervention. We do gain something emotionally. It's nice to feel needed. However, it's exhausted to constantly be needed. So it might take someone, you know, external just to kind of say, hey, maybe take a little, you know, give a little attention in this area.
Yeah, that's great. And that could be somebody obviously that you trust or you know, or somebody that's in a formal kind of coaching kind of relationship. But we can do it too, right, Steve? Like, I don't want to downplay the fact we don't need people to come and hang out with us. And yet it is something that we can offer them if that's helpful, right?
We're always here for you.
And so we'll leave a link in the show notes to our coaching group, which we do have running for, if you're listening to this live in the moment, we got cohorts launching in the fall and in the winter, I think. Right, Steve?
Yeah, we've got cohorts launching all the time. When there's people, when there's need, that's where we want to be there for them.
That's awesome. So by all means, we would love to offer that to you if that could be of service or help. But also we leave our contact info in the show notes. So if you just want to bounce some ideas or to get connected to some other folks that could be helpful, you just let us know. And honestly, we would love to do that for you. As we kind of close out this series and this conversation, first I'll go to you, Lisette, and then I'll end with you, Steve. Lisette, anything you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I just want to say we don't want you to feel like you're doing it alone. We were never intended to do life alone or ministry alone or anything alone. What you do matters. And so we want you to feel energized and feel empowered and feel like you have people with you. And so if we can be those people, we'll be those people, but we only want to be one of your like many. But we're excited to be a part of your journey.
Yeah, that's awesome. Steve, last word to you.
I just want to encourage people to, if you are feeling lonely in ministry, you know what, this is certainly, you're not the only one. And I'd encourage you just to sit down with your, with either a piece of paper or like I did with a spreadsheet and just kind of take some inventory. Who are the people who are pouring into you? And how are that, how is that filling the needs that you have just to stay fueled for the ministry? Who are you running with? Who are you engaged in ministry with, and who's got your back in that, and who are you pouring into? And I like to keep it as a rule of thumb. I realize that there's a lot of people in our lives as people who are doing ministry, but I realize I can carry about 30 relationships really well. And sometimes when I'm attempting to do much more than that, that's when my wheels get a little stuck. Now, of course, you're going to have a lot more people engaged in your networks, but I'm just talking deeply. And so, you know, when I'm doing my relational inventory, if I've got a lot more than 30 names that I'm trying to go deep with, I know I'm probably going to get taxed. And that's when I start to feel a little bit lonely. Hopefully that offers some insight for people. If you want more, like Jer said, you know where to find us.
That's awesome. All right. We'll see you guys back here next week for another episode of the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast.